Time flies, and here it is, another year. And like he said, like Brunel said, 15 years. Wow, where did they all go? Encouragement has been one of the more rewarding things that I've ever done in life. Many rewarding things, many challenging things, but encouragement has been a huge blessing to me and hopefully to many others. And what really is a blessing is when we get the reports back from wives who say, hey, I have a different husband, or children, that my dad is different since he's been coming to encourage men. And one of the goals for encourage men is for us to pursue authentic manhood, to be godly men. I quote my brother pretty often in this, Frank. He says, the problem in this world is men, and the solution to those problems is godly men. What do you think? I totally see that as the answer. God is asking men to step up to the plate, and so this is the pursuit this year of authentic manhood, and so that's going to be part of the journey here. And like Brunel said, we're going to be doing the quest for authentic manhood in two parts, part of it this year, part of it next year. And so it's going to, and we're not going to do it in the first lessons, second lessons. We're going to pull parts of it out throughout the book. Otherwise, it gets imbalanced because when we look at the encouragement program, it starts talking about a lot of wounds. We're gonna look at two of those this year. We'll look at two or three of them next year. So that's sort of the goal of this year. Well, our plan this morning is to look back. And looking back is to understand that if we don't look back, if we don't go back and deal with the unfinished business of our past, the quote up there is something that I've been saying for a long time. If we don't deal responsibly with our past will deal viciously with us. And I totally believe that. I spent a lot of time over the years with hurting people, and that's what I see. So much of the past comes back to haunt us. And then we struggle with that. So what we want to do this morning is I want to go back and look at my past and share some of that with you so that it'll give you an idea of what the goal would be for you to look back and say, this is what I need to do as well. Because in looking back, we start seeing, there's always one of the scriptures that is also pretty potent. It says, the curse causeless will not come. The curse causeless will not. In other words, the curse won't come without a cause. There's always a reason why things happen. And so when we look at the past, oftentimes we can connect the dots and we can see why we are making the decisions that we're making, why we are doing what we're doing. So when I look back, that's my dad. Sometimes we have no idea what's going on inside. We know things are going on inside. It creates voices. We hear voices from the past, even though we're not sure if we're hearing voices or not. Those voices are still telling us things. They're saying you're not worth anything. You're not worthy. You're just a mistake, or you can't do it well enough, or you're not gonna do it right. And so we beat up on ourselves. Why? Well, there's always a reason why. It comes from somewhere. And when I had a good dad. Some of you did not have good dads. Most of you probably did. But even good dads make mistakes. And you know, when I look back on my life, I look at all the mistakes I made with my children, and I wish I could go back, and I wish I could start over again, but I can't. And so part of encouraging men is to say, man, we need to step up to the plate. I love it when young men come who are just starting their homes, or even young men before they even are married, they can get a healthy start on the direction they're going in life. And so that's what we want to do. We are a composite of our past. We don't have to stay that way, though. It's not chiseled in stone. Okay, we can make a change. We can make choices and changes, and that's why Jesus came. He came to redeem. He came to save, and he came to bring a new way of living life. And he is the healer. He wants to heal the past. So our goal is to continually looking at that. When I look at my past, I look at my dad, and people say that I'm a lot like my dad. My relatives, and go to reunions, they say that I remind them of Lloyd. That's Lloyd. Lloyd Brown Reed. His mother's name, last name was Brown, so he got Lloyd Brown Reed, and that's my dad. And so I, you know, when they say I'm a lot like my dad, it's because he's good looking, right? You get that, right? Okay. All right. Anyway, neither here nor there. Quit laughing. It's not funny. But there's unique traits that we carry with us. You know, I walk like my dad. I talk like my dad. You know, that's why people are reminded of my dad when they see me, especially his siblings and people who knew him well. So I want to show you a little bit of a personal picture of my past. And so there's my dad, and he was very kind. He was very loving. He grew up poor. He was one of 11. Came out of West Virginia. They moved to Illinois. One of the siblings said that they one time on the way to church, or I forget, on the way to church or on the way home from church, they rolled the car, and there were 11 in the car, you know, and they just sort of tumbled on top of each other, but they rolled it over, and you know, they got out and straightened the car up, and they had to go back with a horse later and pull it out. But you know, it was just a big family, and so poor that you know, 11 in a car, not a van. You know, they didn't have vans back then, so. But it was a challenge, okay? And they didn't eat well, okay? It was eking out a life. And so that's how he grew up. Well, he married my mom, who was an only child, and the only child of a well-to-do family. And her mom was an only child of a well-to-do farmer in Berks County. He was from a poor man from Illinois, one of 11, marrying an only child who had it made. You know, what does that do? What are the dynamics that make up a home? Just think about your parents and what made up their home. And here's the whole thing. We don't want to blame our past. Don't blame your parents. It's not your parents' fault. Now, some of it is, okay? Some parents are evil. Some people really treat their children horribly. And there's no excuse for that. But you know, oftentimes, like, I watched some of my dad's traits. Well, they came out of how he was treated and what his life was like. And so instead of blaming, let's look for reasons and causes so that we can see and understand, okay? One of the things about my dad is he loved unconditionally. And I think it was because he didn't get hardly any attention at home. But there were three of us boys, and us boys get together and talk, and we talk about how he really did love us. He didn't know how to spend the time with us or tell us things that we really needed to know, but he did the best that he knew with what he was given. And that's what we all do, right? But encouragement is about helping men step up to the plate and do things that are maybe pushing out of their comfort zone with their wives and with their children, so that the next generation doesn't deal with some of the things that we have dealt with. Often said, you know, when we got sick in the middle of the night, my dad was the one that got up with us. Isn't that amazing? And he got up early to go to work, came home late. But if we were sick in the middle of the night, my dad was the one who was there. And I think it was because he wasn't comforted when he was sick. But he would comfort us. I remember throwing up in the middle of the night when your stomach's upset, standing over the porcelain throne, you know, and he would hold my head in his hands, and it felt so comforting that I could put all my weight on that hand, and it didn't give while you're puking your guts out. You know, that's an amazing experience. Are you with me? That's an amazing experience to know your dad is there, and his arm is strong enough to hold you. That's awesome. But also, he wasn't there in many ways. But I remember another one. He took us hunting, and my dad did not like to hunt. He didn't even, he would go out in the woods with us so we could hunt deer without a gun. And he'd sit out there freezing while we're out there looking for deer. Isn't that amazing? And he couldn't afford it because we were poor. We grew up poor. He was not a good financial manager. Very loving dad. So there's so many things that just really made us who we were. And you know what's interesting is is when his dad died, my dad said, "Finally, I'm free." Can you imagine that? And I go, "Why? Where did that come from?" And I talked to two of my uncles out in Kansas quite a few years ago. And the one was from Colorado and the other one was from Kansas. And they said, "Oh yeah, we understand that." It didn't matter how far we got away from our dad, he could always reach out and grab us. So my grandpa was a harsh disciplinarian, and that's him there. That was my grandfather, William Sherman Reed. Named after a couple generals in the Civil War. Okay, W.S. Reed. Yeah. That's my parents after they got married. But anyway, as I look at my grandpa, and then his father, my great grandfather, only it was a step great grandfather, because he was a Confederate soldier, cavalry soldier. And he didn't survive, and so his wife married another person, so he was a step. But still, can you imagine what he saw and what he experienced in life and how that passed on to his wife, which then married my great-grandfather? What makes people do what they do? Okay, when we stop and think about how the past influences our life, and I've heard preachers, I've heard teachers say, "You know, that's in the past. Just let it there. That's in the past. Don't let it impact you." Well, tell me how you don't let it impact you. I'm just telling you, it impacts you. And even if you don't even understand it, as you unpack some of those stories, all of a sudden you realize, now I get it. Now I get it. That was my parents while they were dating. That's our family. That's us three boys. You know, Frank's the tallest. I'm the little guy in the front. Didn't grow up much. And then my brother David, and my dad's holding him. So that was our family. That's how we grew up. And you know, for the most part, my childhood was a happy childhood. My parents really did make our home a good place to be. He married at he was 24. She was 17. My dad had left home early. I think just get away from home. I think home was not good for him, not an enjoyable place. He worked for the Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C. What's interesting, he would take us to Washington, D.C. at least once a year, just because he was familiar with the city, and we'd go down there and tour the city, go to the Smithsonian Institute, the Washington Monument. He just enjoyed that city, and so he would take us down there. So these are memories that are made. But he left early. He started attending a church down there that he knew of, and I've been there a number of times. It's no longer in existence, but the two men that were the leaders of the church down there actually worked in Washington, D.C. as well. But it was a Dunkard Brethren church in Vienna, Virginia. And so my dad started attending church there, and that's how he would have met my mom. Okay, and he was 24. And my mom was 17 when they got married. So there you have a little bit of a difference. And I already told you what some of those were. And you know what I grew up watching? I watched my parents love each other dearly. Now listen to this, please. They loved each other dearly, but they did not like each other. And people say, "How can that be?" Yeah, they really did. They loved each other dearly. And we could tell, and we knew it. And I think that was a stabilizing factor. But they didn't like each other because they came from such different backgrounds that they did, everything they did was so different that everything they did sort of grated against each other. And I tell people when they're courting or when they're dating, look for somebody you can like. Find somebody that you can learn to like, and you spend time with them, and you get to learn your likes and dislikes, and you do fun things together, and you spend time becoming friends. It's much more important to be friends than it is to be lovers. The lovers can flow out of friendship. But you can have a lover and not be friends. And that was something that really, you know, really is important to me. He went to CCC camp. It's where the Civilian Conservation Corps. It was started by Roosevelt. during World War II. And so he was out in Washington, and I read a lot of the letters he sent my mom. And you know what? Those letters are difficult to read. I never finished reading them all. It was too painful because I just saw this lonely, hurting man. And so they attached out of that loneliness and that hurting instead of really becoming friends. We grew up sharing a house with my grandparents, and in some ways that was fine, but in other ways it wasn't, because my grandmother always interfered with our correction, and that wasn't good. And my mom was correcting us, and my dad was a fairly strong disciplinarian. My grandma, not when my dad was around, but when dad wasn't around, she would interfere, and that wasn't healthy. Shortly after that, my brother and I did come on the scene after they were married, and so we moved multiple times, always looking for a better job, greener grass. And I don't remember this, but my brother Frank does. For a short while, my dad just disappeared. The emotional overload took over, and he just disappeared. And it was a scary time. It was a very hard time for my mother. My brother Frank remembers my mom sitting in a chair with her apron over her head, just sobbing. Okay, I never saw that. I was too young. I was there, but I was too young. But that was very impactful for my brother. Company would come to our place after church on Sunday nights, and at 9 o'clock, my dad would just disappear. He'd go to bed. Didn't matter if they were there or not. He had to get up early. That was dad. You know, it's just, why do I tell you these things? It's just so interesting how the intricacies of our life weaves together into a tapestry that makes us who we are. Does that make any sense to you? Okay. I admired my dad. He worked hard. He was intelligent. He could fix just about anything. He put his mind to it. But there was something that was self-defeating about him. He would really pursue something, and about the time it was getting ready to be successful, he would self-defeat. I think it was just part of the way he was wired and programmed, that he just couldn't go ahead and do it. And you know, he was on the road a lot. He would wear out vehicles driving to. He was hanging storm doors and windows all over the place. And he would wear out vehicles, and he wasn't charging enough money. And he would do his job so well, it would take him much longer to do a job than what the people he was working for wanted him to. So, you know, when I bought the business for my grandfather, Ebling Service Plus, I hired my dad to get him off the road to rescue him. So I became my dad's rescuer. Not the greatest thing to do, but you see, I just saw him, and I wanted him to have a place where he could work. He didn't have to drive all over the place, wear out vehicles, and he could get a decent income. And so he came to work for me, and that was, for the most part, it worked out reasonably well. He was killed in February. He was on Groundhog Day in 1994. It had been right after a snowstorm. The snow was piled up on both sides of the road. He was on his way to Ebling's to get the day started. He would come in early and get the furnace going and make sure everything was ready to go. Anyway, snow was piled up on both sides of the road. There was a hay truck that had stalled right in front of the Lebanon Valley Mennonite Church on 501. You probably can picture that. Many of you can. And he ran into the back of that. There was no lights on there. They had electrical failure. There were no lights on. He ran into the back of it, and he was killed immediately because the back of the hay truck was right at the window. He just went right under the truck, and it crushed him. I wish I could talk to him today. I wish I could go back. I wish I knew then what I knew now. I would do my best to help him, and maybe we could talk through some things, because like I said, when his dad died, he said, finally, I'm free. But I would watch him at work, and I'd realize he wasn't free. I'd watch him sharpening blades or sharpening chains, and when he wouldn't know it, it was pretty neat, because I could walk up behind him while he was sharpening chains or something like that, and I just walk up behind him, and I put my arms around him and gave him a squeeze. I really am grateful that I could do that. But sometimes when he didn't know I was looking, I would watch him, and I would watch his face harden, and I'd watch him start shaking. Where do you think that was coming from? There was some anger there somewhere deep. You got some buried stuff that's just causing you to get angry, and then it comes out at the wrong places at the wrong time. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That was my grandfather, David Ebling, started Ebling Service Plus. His father died when he was a teenager, so he became the sole provider and for the family on the farm. So he farmed when he was, I think he might have been 15 when his dad died, so he took over as running the farm. And he was the provider, and so he was a good man. He was a man of integrity. He was a go-getter. He farmed. He had two successful businesses. But he was a workaholic. And I worked on the farm for him all my growing up years, sitting on a, you know, our big tractor was a Farm OH, and the small tractor was a 8N Ford, and I sat on that thing for hours at a time, you know, with a two-bottom plow, plowing all day long, and then the next day, and then the next day. Some of you recognize that. Last night there was a big Fendt harvester and a big Fendt tractor pulling it, driving down through the field behind our house, and I thought, farming sure has changed. Later I became a mechanic in the lawnmower shop. Wonder where I'd be if it wasn't for my grandfather. He was a huge influence on my life. Me, I married, shot my deer. I don't know who that is with that girl. Looks vaguely familiar. Anyway, she was 18 and I was 21. Yeah, 1970. Of course, we got married when we were really 10 years old or something like that. Anyway, you know what? We're married 54 years this year. Wow. Married my sweetheart. And then I shot my deer. I shot my deer and I hung her in the kitchen. Then I went out to conquer the rest of my world. And it worked for a while. But I also became a workaholic. And one of the reasons is my dad was a poor financial manager. And it put a fear in me. The landlord was always there to collect the rent, and we didn't have it. And so my mom would say, "Hey, boys, come on, we need to go upstairs." And we'd go upstairs. Why? To hide from the landlord, because she didn't have the rent, and she didn't want to go to the door and talk to him. You know, the man would come to fill the oil tank. "Come, boys, we need to go upstairs." Why? Because she didn't have the money to pay the oil. What do you do with that? Okay, it put a fear in me, and so I became a workaholic too. Guess what that did to our new marriage? Okay, after a while, you know, I just took my wife for granted. Did you ever take your wife for granted? Okay. I try not to do that. So I was, I called it frugal, okay? And so my favorite word was practical. If it wasn't practical, we weren't going to do it. Well, my wife would have a different word. She would say I was a tightwad, okay? And so, but that fear of failure. I was a middle child. I was grandma's boy. I was mama's boy. And Grace was the oldest of seven. And her parents went to Florida and left her in charge of the farm when she was 15 years old. You know, she was a take charge person. She could get her done. And I was a spoiled mama's boy. Didn't really work very well. You know, it doesn't work. I married and thought my wife should take care of me like my mom did. And honey, I want to be mothered by you, but I also want to have sex with you. That doesn't work. That doesn't work, man. She wanted a man, not a mama's boy. Yeah. A man's life is a series of defining moments. They're family related. They really are family. There's good moments. You know, I remember my grandpa giving me a calf to raise, and I still have the bank book where the calf was sold, and I took $37 to the Myerstown National Bank, and I still have that handwritten amount. Yeah, can you imagine that today? Yeah, it's all computerized, right? And then bad moments of when just difficult things happened. Noble moments, dad believing in his boys. There was missed moments, hurtful moments. It was, you know, dad missing because he worked all the time. He was a workaholic. You'll never amount. And then I never was told this by my dad, but I had men tell me, their dad told them, "You'll never amount to anything. You'll never succeed in life." And I watched one of my brother's friends go bankrupt twice, trying to prove his dad wrong. You see, it's not their fault, but they all influenced who we are. Yeah. And so you don't want to deny the past, but you also don't want to blame the past. And you don't want to excuse the past. Oh, well, that's just in the past, and that's just the way I am. Accept me the way I am. No, let's look at it. Let's look at it. Romans 12:3 says, "For I say through the grace given unto me to every man that's among you, not to think of himself more highly than he ought to think, but he should think soberly." Do you know what that word means? It means accurately. Think accurately about it. Accurately. Tell the truth about it. We want to tell the truth about what makes you who you are so that you can take steps to do something about it. So looking back, okay, there's our family. We had two children. Shortly after we were married, my wife had an abdominal or an ovarian abscess, and it burst, and so we couldn't have children of our own. So we adopted two children. So my son, Jaron, who is now 46 years old, and my daughter, who is like 43, and oh, that's a long time ago. And now we have five grandchildren. We have three. My son gave us three granddaughters, and my daughter gave us two grandsons. Grandson is 20 and 17. And our three granddaughters are 9, 8, and 3. And so we enjoy being grandparents. There's our first grandson, Cameron. What a beautiful, wonderful time. But you see, life changed because he got cancer when he was 2 years old. And I remember walking through the streets of Pittsburgh at the Pittsburgh Children's Hospital, asking God why. Why would you let a two-year-old get cancer? You see, what makes us who we are? What defines us? What defines us? And you know, he got cancer when my daughter was 9 months pregnant, and she gave birth to Jed right after Cameron came home from the hospital, and then he spent 3 years going to, we transferred from Pittsburgh to Danville, so it wasn't so far for them to drive. And so 3 years of going for chemo and treatments. Difficult time. But you know what? He's 20 years old today, and we still have him. And some of the children that he was going to be treated with didn't make it. We saw difficult things at the hospital. But my story, and so you have a handout. If you want to use your handout there, my story is not unique. Your story is not unique. As a man, you're not alone. You're not alone. We're in this together, men. We're here. Why? We're here because we're men. And what we want to do is we want to become the men that God calls us to be. Okay, we don't walk into a meeting and share with everybody else the things that I just shared with you. I don't know your story. You just learned some of my story. And there's lots more of it. But I hope I didn't bore you too badly in sharing that. It's just that, you know, I tried to share some of the things that make me who I am today. And because, you know, after a while, our marriage failed. And my wife told me, "I don't love you. I don't love you anymore. And I don't think I can ever love you again." All I can tell you is that was devastating to me. And years later, we started a Preparing for Marriage weekend. Why did we do that? It's because of my past. You know, what are you going to do with your past? I'm really grateful that, you know, today when I look back, it motivated me. Do you know why we do encourage men? Because of my past. What are you going to do with your past? Is it going to motivate you to become a better person and say, "I don't have to let this define me. I don't have to let my past define me. I am going to be the man that God calls me to be, and I am going to push forward." I take being a grandpa really seriously. I spent the last 2 days with my granddaughters, and we had a lot of fun. We had a lot of fun. Had some corrective moments too. But we're not alone. We are in this together, and we hide behind things. We just try and cover it up. Men, we don't like to be vulnerable, do we? But maybe it's time that some of us are. When a boy fails to connect with dad, voices of one kind or another often fill the void. In working with hurting people, what I see is I see many, many people looking for a dad. And I believe, men, that God calls every one of us who love him to become spiritual fathers. Paul says in 1 Corinthians 4:15, he says, "Though you have 10,000 instructors in Christ," you have many bishops, many deacons, many preachers, "you don't have many daddies." God calls you to be a spiritual father. I don't care how young you are. There's people that look up to you. How about if you come alongside of them? Help them to mature. Help them to grow and say, hey, let's walk this way. Okay, I know it's not easy work because some of them have a lot of baggage that they're carrying with them. Some of us have a lot of baggage that we're carrying with us, but we don't have to let that define us. We don't. So when we fail to connect with dad, voices of one kind or another often fill the void. I hear it all the time. I was just hearing it yesterday, where this person just feels like they just can't make it. They're not self. What was the word that they used? Self-condemning. She said, "I'm so much self-condemnation." Where did that come from? Well, it was because dad was always telling her she wasn't good enough and she wasn't going to make it. Not okay. Many men have yet to reckon with their past or close out the unfinished business that still lives there. Yeah. Yeah, we react to comments, and those comments are still there. They're still inside, even though dad's way past long gone, maybe. Yeah, my dad's gone many years. Maybe you need to write a letter to him. Maybe you need to take it out to the grave and read it. You don't want to blame and condemn your dad. That's not it. We're to honor our father and our mother. And you can honor them even if they were very poor dad and mom. You don't have to love them. You don't have to respect them. That doesn't make any sense, and we don't hear that. It says, children, obey your parents and Lord. But when you grow up, you no longer obey your parents. You're supposed to leave father and mother and cleave to your wife, okay? You're supposed to become a man and step away from that and become a man. But it does say you never quit honoring, and you can honor them if there's only one thing you can give them honor for, and that's they gave you life. They gave you life, and you can honor them for that. Maybe there's other things you can honor them for. Maybe not. Because some parents aren't deserving of love and respect, but you still are to honor them. And here's what happens. When you honor them in your heart because God asks you to, you don't throw them under the bus. You got to be careful, because if you throw them under the bus, they die. And you die, part of you dies with them. You want to honor them and give them the value because they gave you life. Honor them for the things you can give them value for. It's not that what we are is necessarily bad, but it's why we are what we are. It's looking at that. And until a man unpacks his past and deals with the themes and the pain that reside there, he can never be an authentic man. Looking forward to small group time. So we'll start next week. And next week we're going to be looking at having a look at dad. We're going to be looking at dad. And in looking at dad, and then we're going to look at dealing with the father wound. And so in small group time, it might be time for you to unpack some things. Once again, not throwing dad under the bus, but saying, maybe this is why I am who I am and where I am. Because this is a big one. Somehow my concept of what my wife was to be was warped because of a boy's sense of being a male instead of a genuine man. And because of this, I damaged my own relationship to the point of disaster and failure. And much of it came out of an unhealthy view of the past, or an unhealthiness that flowed out of the past. And what people saw on the outside was not who I was on the inside. I was a good schmoozer. I could lead singing, I could teach Sunday school, I could preach. But my wife knew who the real man was, or the real boy was. She knew who the real boy was. Men, we need to grow up. We need to become men. We really do. You cannot become a real man without help. There's no such thing as a self-made man. Okay, and even if it's not in small group, you need to find somebody that you can sit down and talk to. and open up. Somebody who will walk with you. Maybe you can walk together. Okay. For better or for worse, we're all significantly shaped by the family life that we experienced. Okay. For better or for worse, we're all significantly shaped by the kind of family life we experienced. Really important for us. While we are products of our past, we are not prisoners of the past. Can you hear that? We are not prisoners of the past. Some people are. If you allow those hurts and wounds and you never unpack it and you never deal with it, you become a prisoner of the past. And it controls you. That's not what you want. That is absolutely not what you want. You want to unpack it. There's people that are so close to you. Why do men struggle today? There's some people who are so close to you, they don't know what your past was like. And we men, we don't want to go very deep. We don't want to deal with the emotional issues that have been in the past. We're fixers. We fix things. I was a mechanic all my life. And then I'd leave work and I'd go home and try and fix my wife. She really wanted to be fixed. She really enjoyed that. Not. She hated it. And that's what destroyed our marriage. Because instead of loving her and cherishing her for who she was, I would look at the flaws that I didn't like and I would try and correct them and fix them. How many of you like to be fixed? Huh? Yeah, it doesn't work. None of us want to be fixed. And then you know what we do? We talk about what we do, right? That's what men talk about, what we do. What do you work? What do you do? And yeah, you know, what's your job? We don't talk about who we are. We talk about what we do. Yeah. But what we want to do this year is we want to talk about the differences between a human doing and a human being. You want to be a human being. Yeah. Are you a man or are you a boy? Got a couple questions for you. Here's a quiz to determine whether you're a man or a boy. Okay. Number one question. As you grow older, these are goofy. I'm just telling you, they're goofy. As you grow older, what quality of your youthful life do you miss the most? Your innocence? Your idealism? Or cherry bombs? What are cherry bombs? Okay. Only older people know what cherry bombs were, right, Marvin? But you light them and they really crack. Okay. Number two, in your opinion, the ideal pet is number one, a cat? Number two, a dog. Number three, a dog that eats cats. One weekday morning, your wife wakes up feeling really ill. This is question number three. And asks you to get your three children ready for school. Your first question to her is, do they really need to eat? Number two, you mean they're already in school? Number three, there's three of them? Number four, when is it okay to throw away veteran underwear? Number one, when it turns the color of a dead whale, when it has developed new holes that are so large you're not sure which one the legs go in, or it's never okay to throw away veteran underwear. And you know, that sounds stupid, but I've only learned to start throwing underwear away when it's time to throw them away, you know? That's crazy. All right, enough of that. A summary of why men struggle today. Some of it has to do with society. And you know, seriously, let's just back up. Some of it has to do with society. Society is telling us what we need to be thinking about and doing, okay? What's so interesting is years ago, way back in the 1800s, the Industrial Revolution removed fathers from the home. You know, almost all homes were agriculturally based and farming. And the same thing is true. You know, our Amish brothers here, you know, years ago, all Amish were farmers. Well, today, there's not enough farmland. So what do? You get jobs away from home. Did you notice one of the last articles in the Anabaptist Financial Newsletter? Anybody notice? It says, "Can the Anabaptists survive prosperity?" Did you see that? Anybody see that article? Wow, pretty potent, isn't it? That's quite a question. Can we? What do you think? You see, because you see, prosperity really does things for us. It changes us. Okay. World War II. My dad was a teenager during World War II, or he would have been put into. So he went into alternate service, like the CC camp, civilian CPS, civilian public service, civilian conservation corps. He went into those services. But you know, I grew up in the Vietnam War era. I went down to Washington, D.C. and went to the Vietnam War Memorial Wall, and I found one of my schoolmates there who was killed in Vietnam. I was also with another schoolmate who became a tunnel rat in Vietnam. Do you know what a tunnel rat is? Yeah, ugly stuff. Okay, the Viet Cong soldiers had tunnels, miles of tunnels under the ground, and they would just pop up anywhere and mow people down with their machine guns or throw hand grenades or whatever, and tunnel rats had sawed-off shotguns loaded with buckshot and lots of bullets with them, and they would walk through these tunnels, and whenever they go around the corner, he told me, he says, the one who shot first would be the one who lives. And he came home, but his wife had a horrible life. Okay, he slept with a loaded pistol under his pillow, side of his bed. He never sat any place, but his back was always to a wall. Couldn't go to see fireworks. You know, he was a mess. PTSD, majorly big time. What do you do with that? I was with him shortly before he died. He died of cancer from Agent Orange, which was a defoliating chemical they used in Vietnam. You see, life makes us different. Men came back from there and changed. You know, our country was built from people who came home from World War II. You drive on these highways, it was World War II veterans who built those highways, who built the parks, the Civilian Conservation Corps. My father helped build parks and things like that. You know, it was a generation who came home. They were hard workers. They had deep, loyal values, but they were emotionally disconnected from their families. And that's why we deal with a lot of what we deal with, because they didn't know how to connect. Men, we need to learn how to connect. Yeah. So society has a lot to do with who we are. The women's movement has produced a deluge of information telling them that they're equal to men and they're not up to, you know, and they should create problems for men. It's just all over the place. Our culture is rewriting things to make men look like they're buffoons and they're less than what they are. You know, this is what our culture is doing. There's a lot more pushback coming today. Okay. But family dynamics are probably the biggest ones that we deal with. Missing dads, abusive dads, messed up parental relationships. Yeah, I was just talking with this brother this morning. You know what? There's a few others here too. Last year we talked about adoption. My two children are adopted. I'm going to be doing a workshop at the symposium this year out in Shipshawana on adoption. But you see, what happens when dads are missing? What happens in those missing formative years? We adopted our son when he was 10 weeks old. It was, you know, he was just like ours. But our daughter came at 3.5 years old, and she remembers being put in a closet with a can of ravioli with a spoon stuck in it. Okay, what do you do with that? What do you do with that? Okay, and I talk with enough abused Anabaptist children who are now grown-ups to know that we are not exempt, brothers. Encouragement is here because we need to step up to the plate and we need to do what needs to be done. 1 out of 3 females have been sexually abused before the age of 18. One in five, that's what the statistics show us. In the world, but in the church. That's horrible. Men, what are we going to do about it? What are we going to do about it? I run into it all the time. Favoritism. Oh, favoritism in a home will destroy people. It makes people angry. My wife was the oldest child, and she was very capable. But you know what? She was 92 pounds when I married her. her sister was, next sister under her was built like her dad, Rogan. So she could throw the hay bales and she could carry the 5-gallon pails of feed. But her dad would look at my wife and say, why can't you work like your sister? What do you think that did? You see, comparison is so damaging, okay? How a man uses sexuality, his manliness or lack of it, will come from dads. So will you talk to your children, your sons, about their sexuality, especially dads? Will you talk to your daughters about it? It's okay to talk to your daughters about their sexuality if you do it in a wise and healthy, right way with your wives and your wives. Yeah. So many issues that cause us to be more of a boy than a man. Dad relationship, big time. Men not taught by dads how to be a real man, how to be a godly, sexual person in a sensual world. Years ago, there was a Newsweek article. It says, Dad is destiny. It's the male chromosome that decides the sex of the child. Did you know that? If it was only the mother, all children would be girls. All babies would be girls. It's the dad that provides the Y chromosome to create the male. And this Newsweek article was pointing that out. And it also determines the genetic dispositioning of that child. Dads are so important. How a man views his sexuality, his manliness or lack of it, will come from us as dads. Daughters will get their concept of their femininity from their dads by seeing how they treat them, seeing how they treat their mothers and their sisters. Dads are critically and vitally important, okay? We're going to be addressing the wounds of the past, okay? It's so important. We're going to unpack part of our past. Some of us will hardly have any issues. Others will be struggling. Hang in there. We're in this together. We don't like to fix things that we won't want to deal with. There's two types of men. When we get physically hurt, we don't want to look at it. We just push it in the background and say it doesn't matter. Or we get out our own needle and thread and we stitch ourselves up and we keep going. We just don't want to deal with it. But if we stick together, men, in the next 9 weeks, we're going to walk an amazing journey, okay? What we're supposed to be, moving from what you do to become who you are. And who you become is much more important than what you can accomplish. Who you become. And addressing the wounds of the past. And what do we mean by a wound? And a wound is any unresolved issue where lack of closure adversely impacts and shapes the direction and dynamics of a man's life now. Hey, wounds are important for us to look at. And every one of us, and I was going to bring a suitcase this morning, and I failed to do so. I was going to bring a suitcase filled with stuff from my past. Pictures, books, tapes, videotapes, you know. We all carry a suitcase into our marriages. We all carry a suitcase with us through life. And it's what was in our past. And then we got to unpack that. And so this is what this morning's all about, is being willing to next week start unpacking. But even now, you know, we don't want to allow the past to keep on controlling us. But three critical issues, two wounds that we're going to be looking at is the father wound and the all-alone wound. Those are the two we're going to unpack in the next few weeks here. And so addressing these wounds, there's three critical issues. First of all, the first one is addressing the wounds in my past, and that's on your handout, and we failed to get the other two on, so the next two are missing. But establishing a clear manhood vision. A vision. If you don't have a vision, without a vision, people perish. Without a vision, you don't know how to walk forward. Okay? You want a vision of where you're going. And what can make a difference? God's plan is for us men to be healed spiritually and emotionally and then have a vision for where we're going to walk. Hurt people hurt people. Healed people heal people. Come on, man. So let's be willing to look and say, and you know what? It's a continual ongoing journey. It's a life. I'm still on that journey, and I will be until the day I die. And so will you be, but we can start the process and we can start healing so that those emotional wounds don't control us. Emotional injuries cause defensive behaviors. Okay? When you have an emotional injury and somebody bumps that injury, it causes you to react. I smashed my finger in a log splitter. I sold log splitters all my life, but nobody taught me how to use one. Anyway, I smashed my finger in a log splitter. And you know, I was laying in bed one night, and it was pretty well healed. It was really doing well. And I'm laying in bed, and Grace reaches over and squeezes my hand, and I about came unglued. I mean, it hurt so bad. I hollered loud. You see, oftentimes the people who bump the wounds of your past aren't the people who caused it, and it's not their fault. But guess who I reacted to? Her. After that, I start wearing an aluminum splint to bed. Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Defensive behaviors, denying, bullying, manipulation, isolation, taking offenses, getting even. A man is at risk as long as he denies his wounds. We got to look at the wounds. And then, once again, embracing. And then the third one is embracing the truth. Seeking and embracing the truth. This is so important. This is what this is all about. Thinking accurately about yourself. Truth will set you free, Jesus says. You want to tell the truth about the past. And then you want to make decisions, truthful decisions, that'll help you walk. Excuse me. And Jesus says you'll know the truth. The truth will set you free. And whom Jesus sets free will be free indeed. That's who we want to look to. Jesus is our healer. And he has the answers. We have a youth group, and Thursday night, we just looked at gazing at Jesus. And we might unpack some of that this year when we look at Jesus. Okay, but we want to embrace the truth. Jesus' anointed purpose was to bind up the brokenhearted and set the captives free and to heal and to teach the good news. Now, when I think about some of the things that some of you might remember, but when you get to be an old man, you remember things that the next generation doesn't remember. How many of you remember the Amish massacre? Okay, remember that? Pretty nasty, isn't it? What would have happened? Do you know what the news told us? It says that he was a lonely man. What if he would have had a man? What if he would have had somebody else in his life? What if he would have had a dad in his life? Okay. You see, lots of things create problems for us. Encourage Men exists to change the reputation of men from users and stompers and complainers and wimps to just being boys in men's bodies to show our wives, our families, our communities what a man's supposed to look like. We can't get there without digging and digging deep. Sometimes getting into the pus-filled stress areas and clean them out and refilling them with God-ordained designed character that'll show others how a real man should walk. So we're going to be looking at those wounds next week. We're going to start next week. Good to have you here. Start thinking about your past and start unpacking your past. And we'll keep on that journey this year. Thank you, Father, for calling our lives together. Lord, our wives, future wives, people around us, families, they need to see what real men are like, and they need to experience it in each one of us. Father, by the power of your Holy Spirit working in us and through us, would you help us to fulfill your purpose and how you designed us to be men, men of courage, gentle men, loving men, men of justice. Would you help us to balance ourselves with grace and truth and to understand that mercy triumphs over judgment? Thank you for these men. Would you bless them as they go on their way today? And would you prepare us for the work that you have us to do? And we ask it in the name of Jesus. Amen.